accession number 33206, reel 3.
Okay.
Yep.
Mr. Greet, reel 3. While you're in the Mediterranean, the Spanish Civil War was going on.
It was. It was. I was involved in so far as Penelope did a patrol between Valencia. Oh, wait a minute. Valencia and on the Spanish East Coast, I think. Wait a minute, I'll tell you. Valencia and Gandia. We patrolled up and down, up and down, up and down. Hello, my love.
No, wait, thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry to disturb you.
You don't want a biscuit?
No, no, thank you.
No. We patrolled Valencia, Gandia, and we were there to protect English shipping, British shipping, going into either of those ports, because the Spanish had an embargo, and we were accompanied the whole time we were there by a Spanish armed merchant cruiser called the Mar Cantabrico that was with us all the time. And we had one or two standoffs with him at the beginning, because British ships we protected and physically protected to get them into harbour. And there was a well-known English gentleman called Potato Jones who brought his ship in frequently. And anyway, we had a very tense period with the Mar Cantabrico. And finally, we each had our guns trained on each other, and we'd have blown him out of the water. But the two captains met. They decided, I think it was a bit stupid what we were doing. And they met, and they agreed, I think, on some arrangement that they wouldn't interfere with certain shipping. And that's what we were doing. We did that in the Spanish Civil War. And we didn't do more than that. I mean, we didn't go into action or anything. But that was our job.
Okay, can I just ask you a few general questions about the Royal Navy?
Yeah.
How were ships organised? I mean, how big was the crew? And
how was the crew organised?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the crew was divided into specialisations, of course. You had the engine room personnel, the stokers, who did their stoking. and the mess decks, you were all messed according to your specialisation. I mean, I was the mess deck with all the communication ratings, and the stokers were in a mess deck in another compartment, probably. So we were all messed separately, and we didn't actually do anything together except in the free time. You know, we sort of play games together, all that sort of thing. The seamen were divided into watches: port watch, starboard watch, first to starboard, first to port, and they were in the watches according to what was required. Like, if there was a boat to be hoisted, then first part of starboard. You know, they knew who they were and what they were. So they were organised into parts. And also in the ship, the sailors were divided into parts of the ship, like the forecastle. You had the forecastleman who only dealt with the forecastle. You had the midship people, and you had the quarterdeck people at the back end, divided like that. And they all had, each department had its own petty officers, chief petty officers, etc., training. And then, of course, you had the wardroom and the war officers. I don't know, what I can say more than that. Why would you want more than that?
What were your rations like on? What were the rations like on board the ships?
The messes?
Yeah. What would they give you to eat?
Oh, pretty basic. Long tables to be scrubbed, of course. Stools to be scrubbed. and everything was movable because in certain conditions, action stations, etc., you know, you probably had to move them around too for some reason, which would occur, you know, like damage or something. You know, everything had to be movable, and all the hammocks stacked in the corner, they were available for each part of ship to have. But the mess decks were pretty basic, and there was always a noise. Of course, we had fan shafts going through, and you got used to it eventually, you didn't notice it. And hammock bars, railings, you know, everywhere for sailors to hang their hammocks. Portholes, which always had to be closed at sea, and during the war they were closed all the time. We had, as far as the messing was concerned, you had in each mess, in each table, we had duty cooks. You know, you did two of you did it once a week or something, and your job was to go to the galley and get the food, bring the food down, where somebody would. We had a leading hand of the mess, leading seaman. He would serve it out, and it would be passed. We always had plenty to eat. It was passed down. Then afterwards, the duty cooks would clean up all the plates and what have you, and take it back to... we kept plates and things, and nice fork spoons were kept at the mess. But the dishes, the tins, had to be cleaned and what have you. So it was it. Pretty basic. Mm. It's a bit different now. Yeah.
And your duties... solely signal duties, or did they give you other jobs to do on board?
No. Solely signal. Of course, everybody had action stations where you rushed to when they piped the ash. But mine was on the bridge, so it wasn't very difficult. In a battleship, remember, I hadn't been in a ship before, except Iron Duke. It was difficult to find your way around. They're huge. And I don't think I ever did discover my way around, except knowing where I had to go, you know, to work and to and action stations, that sort of thing. You know, you all knew where you had to go. For different reasons, but I mean, I had no reason to go around the ship really, except to find the canteen or something, you know. And I knew all that, but and it was the same in aircraft carriers. I served in three aircraft carriers. It's the same with them. You know, they're huge. You don't find your way around, and you don't need to. Anyway, sorry. Your question was.
I was asking if you had duties other than signals duties, but you said...
No, I didn't. But when there were times when they piped clear lower deck. Now, clear lower deck was done for various reasons, and everybody had to go to wherever they were needed. And one of the things, clear lower deck, for example... was hoisting the sea boats and things, and it needed everybody to, you know, it was all done by hand, and still done by hand. At a clear lower deck, fall in on the starboard waist or something, you know, so you knew where to go. But you would be involved in something of the ship other than communications, but only when needed by, when all the ship's company was needed, which they were sometimes. Time to time.
You mentioned the different watches that the seamen took part in.
Are you going on to the war? Or you?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I'm only talking peace now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was your role organised in a similar way? A similar sort of shift?
A big pardon?
Was your job organised in a similar sort of shift system?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, we were all in watches. We were in... We, in the communication department... were organized into 4-hour watches. And you did the watch one in four. In other words, you did 4 hours, watch one in four. And it could be during a night, during a day. I mean, I spent half my life during a night in a ship. Unless exercises you needed more people, etc. So we were basically in four watches, one in four to do your job on the bridge, and the rest of the time you were cleaning or, you know, training or doing something. But when in the exercises when required, you probably had to be there all the time. You know, it was a bit fluid. But in general, it was just one in four.
And while you were in the Mediterranean, did you get much chance to go ashore when you were in
the Mediterranean? Oh, yeah. I think it was, you stayed on board one night in four, unless required for something different. But I mean, don't forget, we weren't very highly paid. So there wasn't much point sometimes going ashore towards the end of the week. But yes, we had plenty of opportunity to go ashore. And we used to go in dices in Malta. Well, we had Liberty boats. They always have Liberty boats. You have every ship has a motorboat. And the motorboat is used for taking sailors ashore at certain times. But if you wanted to go ashore any other time, you had to get a dicer, you know, chap pushing in the Malta harbour. And had to pay for that, of course, so, you know, that was another thing to worry about. And, of course, sailors love the gut. I mean, it was full of bars and, I mean, you know, it was made for sailors. It was, and girls and the lot. And sailors did go ashore, you know, a lot. And there were cinemas in Malta, and I spent half my life in Malta. You know, and I know it well, and all the cinemas and things I knew. And remember, I was then 17. And 17 then in the Navy, I suppose, was like a 10-year-old now. I don't know, you know, things have changed. We did simple things, and we went to the cinema, that sort of thing. Maybe we'd have a meal, because we were always hungry in a little cafe that dealt for sailors and give you two fried eggs on toast for a mere pittance, you know, the sort of thing. But no, we had plenty of opportunity to go ashore in Malta.
Okay, and so you left Penelope
in August 39.
39, yes.
So 1 month before the war started.
And you said you returned to Portsmouth?
In Portsmouth.
And what were you doing in Portsmouth?
Well, ships coming back from abroad gave leave in two watches. You could opt to go first watch or you could opt to go second watch. Now, the people who went first watch were mainly the married people and, you know, people had reason to go and I had no reason whatsoever, so I opted for second watch. And second leave was best because the ship was nearly naked in the first watch, so you didn't have much to do. And you had your leave to come. Unfortunately for me, I didn't get my leave because the war came. So I lost my leave and regretted it. You know, when you're that age, you want to go home, meet all your friends, your family, etc., etc. But I did go home because we were so few on board. It was possible to arrange with your friend, you know, who did day and day about or something, which we did. So I went home quite a lot, but I didn't get my leave. And unfortunately, I was transferred to a cruiser called the Enterprise, which was waiting to be broken up. And it had absolutely nothing on board, nothing. And my heart sank because I had seen the Enterprise as we came into harbour in Penelope in this super smart, super efficient ship to see this wreck alongside, you know. And when I was told that I was going there, my heart absolutely sank. And we had a month. Remember, ships at the beginning of the war were manned normally half by active service people like me and half by reserves. And the reserves came in dribs and drabs, so on, you know. They all had wives and families and God knows what. So for the first long period in the Enterprise, I was responsible for getting her ready, communication-wise, and ready for sea, insofar as my branch was concerned. And I spent days and nights eating sandwiches and drinking soup and going into the dockyard, getting all the stores and spares we needed to get the ship ready. And we finally succeeded. I mean, I didn't mind the period. I was very, very busy. And we finally succeeded in getting sufficiently, and very quickly, because, you know, there was a panic, getting ready sufficiently to go to sea. You know, we didn't really have everything we wanted, but we could go and fight the war if necessary. Glad we did at the beginning, otherwise. And people came in dribs and drabs, and we finally sailed with a good 50%, not really, no, they were all RMVR, Volunteer Reserve, and, you know, they just spent a weekend once a year in a minesweeper or something. And so, you know, we had this lot, so you can imagine what life was like. I mean, for people like me, we were had to do everything we had to do. And so the Enterprise, after a period, I can't remember how long, not long, we managed to get everything we needed and get ourselves ready to go to sea, but it did mean working day and night. And I mean, under normal circumstances, that ship would never have gone to sea at all. She was waiting to be broken up. She was full of rust and what have you. And I mean, it had to be made into a fighting ship, which we did. And we sailed. Some of the sailors were still in civil clothes. One chap on the forecastle, I remember, I looked over the front of the bridge, was wearing a bowler hat. I suspect he was making a point. I don't know. And we sailed for the North Sea.
Could you backtrack slightly for a moment? Do you remember, can you remember hearing about the outbreak of war?
Yes. Remember, we didn't have radios. We didn't have anything. And we were busy anyway. So I can't remember precisely how we knew that war had been declared, but obviously something as important as that goes round like wildfire. So I suspect, I was told or heard it from people. I didn't hear it officially anywhere. So, of course, that started the panic. I mean, you remember, it wasn't just my branch, it was the gunnery branch, it was everybody. They were getting ammunition, we didn't have any ammunition. And when you ammunition ship, normally you just top up because, you know, you're full up with ammunition anyway, and unless you use some of it in exercises, you don't need very much. But with a ship starting brand new, we had no ammunition at all. And so that was another occasion of clearing lower deck where everybody, no matter what they were doing, had to drop what they were doing and help with the ammunitioning, because it took quite a time, and it's quite a specialist job. And the engine room, I mean, the engines weren't working. They had to get those working. So it wasn't just us. It was the whole of the ship were rushing like fury to try and get their department organized. What did you ask me? I've forgotten.
About what you remembered about the outbreak of war.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sure I was told, you know, I just picked it up, and I'm sure it was only about a minute past 11, because that would go round like wildfire, and I'm sure it did, yeah.
What was your reaction to the fact that you were
17, highly trained. I think probably I thought it was a good thing, you know. That's what I joined for, let's do it. But I mean, I had no idea what was going to come. No, I think I wasn't concerned. I was quite prepared for it. Prepared, I think, was probably the word. Yeah, you know, ready for it. I didn't mind. We expected it anyway, I think, so it was no shock. There we go.
Mm-hmm. What were living conditions like for you on board Enterprise?
Conditions?
Yeah.
Oh, rough. I mean, she had nothing. She had no mess tables, no stools, anything. We had to get all this. And, I mean, some of it we didn't get. Because, remember, lots of other ships were doing the same thing. And so in the dockyard, you could either get what you wanted or you couldn't. And most of the time, you know, by sheer perseverance, you probably could. And, I mean, by pushing and shoving, you could probably get what you wanted. But we sailed without a lot of things. But it didn't affect the efficiency of the ship, just the comfort of the sailors. You know, that's the way it was. And, things were rough because the ship had nothing to start with. And we just had what we could get.
So were your sleeping conditions and rations much the same as they had been in peacetime?
Oh, we were fed all right. Because, there is a supply department and a cookery department, and they were doing their stuff, and they seemed to do all right. I can't remember that we were hard up for food or anything. We were fed, but the war was on, and guns had to be manned, anti-aircraft guns. We expected to be bombed, but we weren't. So, you know, life was difficult because you had to share what you were trying to do to get the ship ready with defending the ship if necessary. Hmm.
What about cleanliness on board? How would you... what about washing facilities and cleanliness? How would you keep yourself clean?
There were always washing facilities. You know, a bit like a boarding school. Rows of basins and things, and we had showers. But of course, water in a ship is always a problem. So you're a bit restricted. But in fact, you know, you could keep yourself clean without too much problem.
Okay, and so you set sail for the North Sea?
Yeah.
You say, and what was the role of the ship in the North Sea?
Patrol. Looking for submarines, looking, but our main task was looking for merchant ships. You know, there had to be German merchant ships around the place because, you know, they didn't expect it either. In fact, we didn't find any German merchant ships, but we found a lot of neutral workers, Swedes, Denmark, whatever. I say in my book, because of my fitness in general, this and that, was permanent boarding party, night and day. And they always had to have a communicator because when we went to a ship, I mean, they're all liners, we had to communicate back to the ship what was going on. And the thing I remember most, I think, was the sort of startled looks of the passengers in the ships. They'd all been on cruises or whatever. With all this armed team coming on board, you know. And the weather in the North Sea was pretty rough. But night and day, I had to go. But I didn't actually play any part in handling the ship. And it was under oars. It was always under oars because you couldn't rely on motors. You know, everything was under oars. And I didn't do any rowing or anything. I was rather special at the back in. And I didn't do any of the lowering. I just went down in the boat and got picked up in the boat. But that in itself, of course, is quite a manoeuvre. When the sea is doing this sort of thing, to get the boat back up, you've got to hook on at the right time. And if it's the wrong time, you'll be left hanging and, strain on everything up top. Anyway, life was pretty energetic in the North Sea. And we took ships into one of the islands up north, right up north, north of Scapa Flow. Oh, Christ. Can you switch off? I'll have a... Oh, here we are. Boarding party consisted of one officer, then permanently me as the communications link. No matter that I might have been off watch and catching up on sleep. It was either me or a reservist, so there was really no contest. Life was like that. Shetland Islands. One or two things I remember well about the patrol, other than the problems I have mentioned above, the startled looks of the line of passengers as we went on board armed to the teeth. They really had no idea what was going on and feared the worst. They were mostly neutrals. We took suspect vessels into the Shetlands where they were. We had nothing more to do with them. They were, and I had to go in the vessel with the boarding party while the ship went on doing something else. So in the Shetlands, I mean, nothing to do there but just wait for the ship to come and pick you up. And I must confess that I had fears now and again that they weren't coming. And I was going to be stuck in the bloody Shetlands with the sheep for the rest of the war, you know. But two main things about the shocking weather. One of my main memories of this period of the war, the weather. No, it was September, October, November. And the North Sea is no picnic. Anyway, that was our first job.
So when you were when you went on board these other ships, how would you communicate back to Enterprise?
With a light or semaphore. We didn't have radios. Radios weren't in existence. With a light, with a portable.
Typically, what sort of messages would you be sending back?
Who they were, what they were, where they came from, where they were going, what they were carrying. Because we would go on the bridge. I would go on the bridge with the landing officer, the boarding officer, and we would go through their books and things and tell the ship what they were doing. And the ship would decide whether there was any suspicious nature, in which case I and the boarding party would stay on board and we'd go back to the Shetlands. Or for the most part, I mean, they were innocent. They were neutrals. And they weren't carrying any German war materials. But of course, the thing you had to look at was whether it was a German ship disguised as a neutral. And that was important to look at all the books and things and decide that they were genuine. And if there was any doubt, then we'd take them in the Shetlands. So that was my job at the beginning of the war. First job.
And were there any other duties that the Enterprise carried out in the North Sea?
Well, I mean, we were principally a patrol looking for German ships, ready for German ships. I mean, we didn't know what the German Navy was going to do. They could have come up there. Submarines, you know, what the Navy does in general. And that was our job, patrol. And I think we were pretty well alone up there. I can't remember seeing anybody else.
And did your personal duties change much?
My?
Your own duties as a signalman, did they change much?
No. I mean, no. Just the normal ship's duties. We were in two watches, huh? On, off, and action stations. Morning, dawn and dusk, action stations, no matter what your watch was. So you've probably been up half the night. Then you have to get up at 5 at dawn, whatever. And we were in two watches all the war, and plus action stations and any other occasion where you were required. I mean, the Navy wasn't like general life in commerce. I mean, you were there 24 hours a day. For which they said you were paid. A pittance. There we go. Yeah.
Had your pay gone up at all since you started?
What?
Had your pay gone up at all since you started?
The pay? Well, I mean, yeah, I went up in promotion. So, I mean, my pay went up with promotion. But in general, at that time, pay didn't go up except for promotion. And that was the same, generally speaking, throughout the country, because inflation was non-existent and people knew what the job paid and they accepted that, and that was it. And I mean, it was the same with the Navy. The Navy, nobody ever complained about what they were getting because they knew what they were going to get in, and that was it. But I mean, as I went up, as I did fairly quickly, my pay went up with the job. I knew what the job paid, and that was it. Accept it. I don't remember ever getting... I remember my first raise of pay that wasn't connected with the job was... it was after the war, and I remember my pay went up £3 a week. And I remember thinking, my God, I'm rich. And but that's the only time I can ever recall. Otherwise, it just paid the job.
Okay.